Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to the Curator Podcast, Season 2, Episode 19. The Return of Jonah Matranga.
Jonah, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm
you look tired, man.
I'm midway through, you know, 40 show summer, and today begins 20 shows straight up till the end. It's just a straight run through the UK for August, and
20 shows in the UK, yeah. And Europe as well.
No.
Can you do 20 shows in the UK?
I know. You'd think, right? I know. No, it's just I'm doing, so I did Dunlop, and of course I did 2,000 Trees in July, but in this month I did Dunlop, and then Glasgow Tonight, Inverness, Aberdeen, and then down to, I think, Bolton, and anyway, yeah, so I'm covering a lot of ground.
Inverness to Bolton, man, that's a drive.
Yeah, well, no, we're doing Inverness, Aberdeen, Bolton.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so we got a little.
Yeah, a little, nice. So you're going right up to Inverness after this?
Yep. Yeah. What's it, like 5 hours from here?
Yeah. So the same as Aberdeen, it's just up the west coast to the east coast.
So anyway. Yeah, I mean, I'm tired and, but tired on tour, sort of a relative thing. I'm just in a place called being on tour. I'm sure that I'm tired. I always know I'm tired because when I get home, I'm really fucking tired. And right now, like, I actually feel good.
Well, you look content, though, which is probably the best thing to say.
Well, that's a nice thing that comes with tired sometimes, is sometimes when I'm tired, my ego and my brain and my vanity can't get going too much because I'm just... Because that takes energy. Mm-hmm. It takes energy to keep that up. And it's kind of nice to just let that go a little bit. And, I've had a couple of days off between mainland Europe and here, so that's... It both makes me more tired in that I'm sort of rested and I kind of... So, yeah, we'll see.
Do you ever get anxious on tour?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I do get anxious on tour. And it takes different forms. And that is one thing in some ways that just getting into kind of tour survival tired mode helps with. Because it's that there's a saying in a lot of sort of self-care circles that's a... When I got busy, I got better. And it's just kind of, if I'm doing stuff, if I'm in motion, kind of don't have as much time to kind of stew and get anxious and freak out. So, yeah, I think out on tour for me, for the most part, it's pretty existential angst. It's you know, on the bad days, it's sort of, you know, what the fuck am I doing with my life? You know, how's this out? And on the good days, that same thing is, you know, there's either, this is my 20th summer or 20th year coming to the UK. I guess I came over in October, November of 97 for the first time.
Yeah.
And so some days it's, fuck yeah, it's been 20 years. That's amazing. And somebody's like, God, I've been doing this for 20 years. What is my problem? So it, the same thing, different moods.
It's pretty cool that you still been doing it for 20 years.
It is. Mostly it's just astonishing to me that it has been and it's all worked out pretty well. I'm still happy. I'm still alive. I'm still healthy. People still give a shit what I do. I feel unbelievably fortunate, really.
That makes me wonder, man, like, see, with the fact that now it is now going to be your 20th year, do you ever kind of still get the wake up one morning and think, holy shit, it's the day that it ends? Like, it's not going to matter anymore?
I mean, I've been watching my audience and my sort of relevance in the industry and in the scene. I've been watching that dwindle for years. I mean, really, and not that it was ever that big, but And I've been kind of consciously letting it dwindle in the sense that there's just, there keep being things that I don't, I don't really want to put my energy towards them. I understand that there would be good things to do for my career and for this and this and this. And I keep moving towards this idea of it has to be fun. It has to be enjoyable. It has to be, the whole process needs to be fun and interesting. And not that, I mean, I just work and do also, I mean, I'm on my computer all the time, keeping in touch with people. And so there's a grind to everything. And that's part of being DOI. And I happen to love that. And sure, I'm always thinking that, I've been thinking for a long time now that it's going to end. And it keeps going in this really cool way. I mean, and earlier in this tour, I had a real, is this going to end? Because my voice went out in a way that it really hasn't before. I mean, I've had my voice be pretty rough on tour over the years. And this one was, I don't know, it just felt different. And
did you have to cancel a show for that? Was that?
I never canceled one. I didn't do that. But there was a couple that
touch
my voice canceled.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I played a hardcore fest in Czech Republic called Fluff Fest. And I was growling my way through that set, and people were super sweet though. And then I played in Vienna in this tiny little cafe, and I sang so fucking quiet. I just sang so, and I just, it's very humbling. Mm. It's very humbling to be a singer and not have a voice. I mean, what the fuck am I supposed to do? So, yeah. So that was a time when I was like, oh wow, maybe I'm done doing this. Like maybe I have to completely change the way I do this. So yeah, that's forever in my head, and it's kind of nice. I like living with that sense of mortality, actually. It kind of keeps me fresh.
Yeah, the voice thing was something I wanted to ask you about, actually, because I, as a singer, I've struggled with my voice. Only I've been doing hardcore stuff for about a couple of years now. Yeah. and
it's no joke.
It is no joke, man. And I've been getting into the habit of asking singers about their voice, because a lot of bands that I've seen that I really love, like, I'll talk to the singers, maybe not on the podcast, but maybe afterwards, like,
sure.
How's the throat going? And they'll always be like, well, maybe a little bit dodgy today, do you know what I mean? It doesn't always hold out for like a whole tour and stuff, and it makes me go, man, why do we do it to ourselves?
Yeah, you know? it's a fair question.
But it's love, it's passion.
Yeah, and it's that line between passion and compulsion. It's a very interesting and mysterious line. And yeah, the voice stuff, I, frankly, for a lot of years, you know, I get my sleep and I get my water and I do that stuff. And I just really didn't worry about it too much. I just thought, I'm just going to sing, do the best I can, and knock on Ford Focus dashboard plastic. It's been okay. And this last time when it went out, and I was in the middle of a bunch of shows and traveling, and it really went out in a way that felt different. I did actively, like, I called singer friends. I looked online. I was like, okay, what can I do? And I did a lot of steaming stuff and made some little, a lot of lemon and honey and cayenne pepper sipping. And I think it's a good thing for singers to talk to each other. And I think the fact is most of us don't really know what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah,
and we're
totally.
Just, we're not classical singers. We're not technicians. Oh. We're, to me, if you're in anything like rock and roll, whether it's whatever branch of rock and roll it is, you're generally not in the most ideal environments, and you're generally just going hard. Mm-hmm. I go hard when I sing. It's just sort of, it's written into the songs. I can't really sing a lot of the songs halfway. It just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And it's the way they arrived. And so I guess it's not that I have to do them that way, but it's kind of what it calls for.
For singing the songs halfway is also a thing which I think is really interesting, because I don't think I could sing a lot of songs, even like songs that I like from a lot of artists that are playing guitar. I don't think there's any way that I could do them, part way either.
Well, that's my thing, is that I've always hated practicing. Mm-hmm. I've hated singing a song. I love writing a song, and I sort of like singing it while I'm learning it. And I like singing it for people. But even when I'm at a sound check, generally speaking, I sing it pretty hard. Just because, I think songs are meant to be sung. I don't really want to do music as a utilitarian thing. I want to do it because it shakes me up and it feels great. And so, it's hard for me to sing a song halfway, yeah.
So let's. I want to go back to the 20 years.
Yeah, sure.
Just for a wee second.
Yeah, please.
You wrote a book. Are you writing a book?
Right. Yeah. This is why. Yeah, my mind. No, it is done. The book is done.
Was it hard?
It was. As I've been saying at a lot of shows, and this is just true, I now have a really felt sense of why so many writers drink themselves to death and kill themselves. I really do. It's a different discipline for me than writing songs ever was.
You need to pull it out, man. You need to just fucking grind that shit out.
It's a different thing. Yeah, I mean, there's no melody to lean on. There's no rhythm to lean on. There's no volume to lean on. It's a longer form, so it can't be just like the cute couplet and then let the guitarist take it for a while. It's all words. It's all... everything has to be on the page. And then... Yeah, and then I was writing about my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to write a fluffy piece of bullshit, and I didn't want to write a sensationalistic piece of bullshit that kind of went around the sort of subtleties and complexities. I just wanted to really write what happened, and I was pretty depressed through it, and it wasn't that I was sad about what I was writing about. I just think that the creative process stretched out that far for me. I was spending a lot of time alone, and with all these thoughts and all this getting older and all this sort of the past and the present and the what's happening, and it was a lot. It was a serious thing, and I'm really happy I did it. It's nearly 400 pages. It's a real book. I think it's a good book. And part of me thinks I'll never ever try to do anything like that again. And I'm so happy to just be out here singing songs. It's just so much simpler in every way. And there's a lot of mornings lately where I wake up with book ideas in my head, and that's kind of a nice feeling because now I know what they mean. Mm-hmm. I'd always dreamt, I think, of writing a book. I think maybe a lot of people do, the great American novel and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And now that I've done it, I still have those dreams, but they feel different. I feel a little bit more cautious about them, kind of careful what you wish for. And I feel more like, okay. So I have a more of a sense of what that might be like to try and do that. But yeah.
Was it less reflective part of you that kind of decided now might be the time to put these into words? Or
honestly, I think, and this is one of those careful what you wish for things, I was feeling kind of done with music or something, kind of wondering what was left. And I wanted to be home more. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to not rely on touring so much for my income. So I did a Kickstarter thing, and which I've done a lot before to make albums, but I set the goal higher, both because if I was going to write a book, I really wanted to make sure someone gave a shit about it. And also because I knew that I wanted to stay home for longer, and I knew that it may well take longer to write a book than make a record, which it definitely did. It started out, ironically, as kind of I wanted to relax a little bit. And I did relax in a lot of ways writing it. It helped me get a lot of perspective on things. And it was the discipline it took and even the depression it brought all humbled me. And I think that was good. And it also was the opposite of what I thought I was going to get. I mean, it was very strenuous physically and emotionally in its own way. It was just, I was kind of just curious. I was also curious to see if I could use my brain to do something other than music, which is really all I've ever used it for. Music and fighting on the internet. So I wanted to see how it would feel to use it for that. And that felt nice too, to kind of stretch in that way. It was nice.
And now that you've done it, was it weird in the process of looking over your life and going, holy shit, I did that thing or I did those things?
Yeah, I mean, it was, that part was really cool though, honestly. Sometimes I would discover in writing about things over the course of a decade, I would sort of start seeing these patterns that weren't super flattering to see. And I'm a pretty self-analytical, done a lot of work, introspective person anyway. So none of it was a super big surprise to me. And so most of that was actually quite rewarding to kind of watch myself grow up. Mm-hmm. And so the book is about, it's called Alone Rewinding, 23 Years of Fatherhood and Music. And and my daughter's going to be 23 this summer. And so it was really about this parallel journey of being a dad and being scared of being a shitty dad and being scared of turning out like my dad and leaving and trying to be an artist, which was this completely blank slate, mysterious dream thing. And how those two centers of my heart and of my life worked together and wove together, and they could have ripped each other apart, but they kind of propped each other up in this really nice way. And the people, it gave me an even deeper appreciation for the people that have supported me in the music over the years. Because I saw, not only, of course, I was looking back on the fact that they helped me raise my kid, literally, I also saw that the relationship I've had with people that like the music and the way that has happened has been something of a family for me. My family's pretty small, and there's been a lot of trauma in my family over the years. And so it was neat to see how my fatherhood saved my life and also how my music saved my life. Mm-hmm. And it was so in that way, it was incredibly rewarding. And around the middle of the book, I was really frustrated, and I was like, what the fuck am I, why am I just making another piece of fucking merch, you know, like just stop this stuff. And then it occurred to me, literally walking out the door one day, I really remember the moment, I realized when the book was done, I was going to have a keepsake to give to my daughter that was going to be my best attempt at saying who I was, who she was to me, what our life was like while she was growing up. And she has her own memories and her own stuff to do. And it felt really amazing to know. I just started picturing, honestly, I would start picturing handing a manuscript to her, just like a big long letter. Mm-hmm. This is what's up. And so that's really the impetus for the book. And once I found that, then I had a real sense of purpose behind it.
I'm going to preface this next thing I'm going to say by saying I'm not trying to name drop, no. But when I spoke to Laura Jean Grace about her book,
sure,
she was also saying that it's like, she was fucking terrifying to think that people were going to read this stuff. Have you got that same fear as well?
Yeah, I mean, sure. And it's funny. I think I get more nervous about the internet these days than I do about a book. I mean, I guess I suppose someone could cut and paste something out of the book and take it way out of context, and that's whatever. But it's cool because the book exists and anyone who wants to can see all of the context. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas an interview or a piece of gossip or story someone tells about me or picture someone takes of me or something, I'm in far less control of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And obviously our whole commerce these days is stories about each other. Mm-hmm. Pretty much. And so that actually frightens me more than the book thing. And also, I mean, I put a lot into the book and I thought a lot about it. It's a pretty easy thing to stand behind, even if it's not a flattering moment that I'm talking about. I didn't talk a lot of shit about people. I just didn't, and not because I wanted to avoid controversy, but as I really started thinking, what am I going to put in these 400 pages about the last 23 years? It just, a lot of the bullshit's kind of fell away. It's just not that important, mm-hmm. you know, and I understand lots of people sell lots of books by telling salacious stories about this and this. But if I was just trying to write the most true thing that I could, and when it really came down to it, a lot of the fights and a lot of the crazy times, they at best seemed kind of emblematic of a larger theme mm-hmm. that was already clear.
Mm-hmm.
And at worst, just, you know, like totally silly, sensationalist bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, which again, like the economy runs on that. And, so yeah, I could see that. And to be totally clear, you know, her book, I'm presuming, dealt with her transition and her, I mean, you know, just whatever, mm-hmm. I haven't read it. So, but whatever she went through, which I've been through some hard stuff yeah. and that's fine. Yeah. And I don't have anything in my life around which there's that much hostility directed yeah. uh-huh. towards, you know, and I take really seriously my privilege in that way, like as a dude, you know, as a straight cis yeah. white guy. If anything, I was writing about my sort of awakening to that as I grew up and in a lot of different ways. And And trying to be real about that, who I was as a kid and how that was growing up. So in her case, I'm imagining if I had something in my life around which there was that much judgment and hostility and divisiveness, you know, that it would be a much more intense process, I would think.
I've actually been thinking about I'm going to say that again. I've actually been thinking about this a lot recently, and it's interesting you bring it up because I was thinking about it later on as well. Is this whole idea of like white male privilege and having to check it all the time. And how so many people don't. Like, I was listening to a band called The Comedians today, or like, I don't know if you've heard them, but like a sort of Asian American punk band. Muslim punk sort of thing. And I was thinking, well, that's amazing, I've never heard of that before. And then one of their videos is about like a guy who basically gassed to get off a plane because he was Asian and he had like a white box and stuff like that. And he didn't get off a plane because in the box was just baklava. So, and he shared it with the people. But people were just asking him, thinking they could just say, you know? And to me, it's just like, well, why can't people see these patterns? You know, what? I mean, I know that, like, we can speak in the benefit of having thought about it and go, you know what, hang on a second, yeah, we have got privilege because, you know, we just so happen to be white and male and they seem to have ruled the world, which is fucking pretty shitty. You know what I mean?
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
People can't see it, and obviously there's some really good examples of that right now.
There's a lot of fear going around. It's funny because a lot of times one of the lines against even thinking or talking about this subject is, why do you like white guilt? That's what a lot of people say. And I have nothing to feel guilty for in the sense that I was born into the system. I didn't create it. I didn't do anything. All it's about for me is acknowledging that it even exists, which really, you don't need a history degree to see it. Like, it's really easy to see.
Just turn on the TV.
You can look at wages. You can look at, you know, school. You can look at income. You can look at prison. You can look at literally any facet of society. The most cursory, simple take on it, and you see the advantage that it is being white, being male, being straight. These aren't hard. These things shouldn't even be argued about as far as the numbers go. It's not even really worth it. So then the choice is, wow, I've got some more power in this system. What am I going to do with it? That's really the only choice. And I'm not sitting around feeling ashamed of it. Cause again, it's where I am. What brings me, what I really think about is actually projecting further. I've got a daughter growing up. So I would like to leave the world a little less shit than it was when I came into it on these levels. I would like to use my power. And there's a phrase, leveraging your privilege. You know, there's all these phrases going around and some people just get so scared of them. And I just think it's really interesting. I think it's like, I was born with a little more money, literally and figuratively, than other people, and a little more ability to get money. So just, and money is money, but I'm just saying it's a good measuring stick. So how am I going to spend it? Am I going to spend it on a fucking fancy car for myself, or am I going to spend it sort of like helping some other people get fed a little more? And I'm still good. Like, I'm fine. So I don't really get all the anger, except for the fact that the thing I liken it to the most is the fossil fuel industry.
As we sit in a car.
As we sit in a car. No, I mean, but just purely as a metaphor, because so the fossil fuel industry, regardless of what the facts are about it, again, it's very easy to see the numbers on it, but it's been going for a long time and there's all this infrastructure built up around it. And the people that run it and make trillions and trillions of dollars from it, forget about whether they're good or bad people or whatever. It's It's all they know. It's all their family knows. We're all, to some degree or another, terrified of the unknown. Mm-hmm. So to switch, to sort of say, not only am I going to go into a totally unknown place, I'm going to willingly give up this sort of, you know, this stratospheric level of privilege and power that I have. I can look at all the numbers and know that solar is better, know that wind is better, know that we need, if we're going to even survive, all of us at all, we need to figure it out. And people are still stuck to it. And I'm stuck to it habitually. I still have a car. I know the facts. Mm. I'm not in the street right now burning down a fucking police station. Like, and it's not that, you know, one could argue the value of that idea. My point is that I get to choose where I'm going to be in this conversation. And I just don't want to be another straight white guy in angry denial of really easy to see facts and clinging tightly to this identity and this shit that I never even wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for it, frankly. I make a living singing. You want to tell me, like, that, you know, I don't know what the numbers are on likelihood of success of straight white cis guy singing versus, you know, black, Muslim, lesbian, transgender, whatever the fuck singing. Mm. But there's a disparity there. Yeah. I can promise you that. You know, I have an easier time being let into people's houses and being trusted on planes and being trusted in clubs and being trusted as a product to sell.
Yeah.
And it's not even, and again, I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not even, I just want to be real about that. I want to be real about gravity and the sun and privilege.
Yeah.
They're the same thing to me. So yeah, I don't understand the upset, but there certainly is a lot of fear. And everyone knows the world is getting browner. That's sort of the way evolution goes. And I think the choice right now for white people, you know, just to keep it in that particular thing, I would say it's sort of white people and men are the two rulers, and they're sort of white men, which is like, wah! And we do most of the killing have most of the money and most of the raping and, you know, most of all that stuff. So it's just sort of, am I going to be curious and try and broaden my world or am I going to tighten up? And that's, I think that's the choice. And unfortunately, a lot of people are tightening up.
I think the moral part of me kind of goes, well, how can you not see this pattern and not want to act on it?
Right. I mean, there is a little bit of, again, there's lots of metaphors of, if I'm walking along and not only do I see that I'm safe and on the other side of the street, someone is in serious peril, I also have to recognize that my safety literally is part of their peril. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Their lack of safety comes at the expense of my excess of safety. Mm-hmm. And these are just numbers. This isn't an opinion. It's not a... These are just numbers. Any look at history, any look at anything will show this. And so, yeah, there just becomes a choice of who do I want to be in the world? And no one's looking. You know, I'm not even coming from like a God place. I'm just saying, who do I want to be? If when I'm falling asleep at night, and really, to be totally real about it, like when I'm dying and looking back on my life, what am I going to want to look back on? What am I going to be proud of? Mm-hmm. And my biggest fear, honestly, isn't getting hit by a safe. I don't want to die right now, but my biggest fear is live until a ripe old age where everyone around me would say, oh, he lived a good life, and me knowing inside that I fucking cheated.
Yeah.
And I've already cheated enough. We all cheat. Oh, my God. It's just like, it's one big fucking cheat. So it's fine, but I don't want to do that as much as possible. It's more fun for me to...
Yeah.
And I like facing discomfort. I happen to be a person who... Yeah, it kind of enjoys that feeling of like, oh, let's see what this habit is and let's see why I feel safe here and why I don't feel safe here. And
speaking of this comfort and this kind of hope,
that is basically
a segue.
Yeah, yeah, please, please.
An extended segue. I've noticed you've been a lot more active politically online and just generally as an artist.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's I don't know whether I have or not. It's interesting. I've been looking, well, as I write this. So the book is based around 36 songs over the course of my life. Each chapter is a song. And it's not really about the songs. It's about where I was in my life when that song happened.
Songs you've written or songs by other people?
Songs that I've written. Yeah, I mean, there's tons of songs by other people referenced in the book, but I'm saying the chapter titles are literally song titles. And there's a soundtrack to the book that's each of the songs. And So within that, I was looking, going, what out of the hundreds of songs that I've written and recorded, what songs will represent this part of my life? So anyway, I was looking at other songs, and all this is to say, looking at the songs, I mean, when I was in high school, one of the songs I wrote was called Get It Off Your Back, and it was a song about the pharmaceutical drug industry. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how he was even thinking about that at 14, but it's just like these, what is it, the, you know, these 80s pharmaceutics stronger than the street drugs make all the rich old ladies happy little human slugs, but it's all right for them because doctors know best, and if the pills don't get finished, then they'll swallow the rest, you know. Like, and I mean, I grew up on punk rock and stuff, yeah. And so I'm sure whatever, but I was writing about race, and I was writing about gender, the early Far stuff. I was looking back on it, and there's a song called Seasick, which is kind of about, you know, our slaughter of the indigenous people. And so it's actually always been in my whole sphere. And we're in the age of social networking, where again our currency is kind of our voice, mm-hmm. And it's all over the place, for better or for worse. And so at one point, and again speaking of privilege, I have something like probably 10,000 people on each little network or something like that, and whatever, however reach works in that. And I just thought, again, how am I going to use my voice?
Yeah.
And I post tons of cute, silly shit because it's fun, and it's fun, and it's life, and it's love, and it's totally great. And I did at one point start making a conscious choice of, if I've got this voice, and frankly, I don't take social networks that all seriously, in the sense that they're not like being face to face. They're not being with my friends. I mean, so what am I going to do with it? And I just started really kind of choosing that more. And then honestly, it's really that I was saying the same thing for a while. And as it got more divisive, people started noticing, I think, more. And I think, frankly, where a lot of people got off and stopped talking about it, or only talked about it to this degree of passion, mm-hmm. I kept going because I think it's a little bit like the music. I kind of like to go hard. I want to know I left it all out there. Yeah. And so for me, thought and conversation it's the same thing as songs. It's the same thing as a show. I want to see what I got. I want to see what's there. I'm curious as to push it, and I want to be wrong, and I want to learn, and I want to do that. And again, as a straight white cis guy, I just saw so many of my buddies either being outright shitheads or just kind of letting it go by because they know they're going to be okay. And it's been really, honestly, really, really depressing for me. Mm-hmm. It's like I don't know a lot of skinheads or neo-Nazis. I know some people that are pretty conservative and have certainly known them over the years. But more what has bummed me out has been the sort of really polite, quiet, let the latest killing go by kind of attitude. And I've just, it's not to impress anyone. I'm sure I've lost more friends and listeners than I've gained. Yeah. So it's not a business move. It's not to be cool. I don't need to be liked by someone. I want to have an interesting life. I want to feel happy with myself. And to some degree, I want to do what I can to offset all of the white voices that are silent.
It's like karma, almost.
I mean, and that's a funny term. I kind of gets tossed around a lot, and I'm not sure quite what I even think of it. But if karma is the idea of that, me just putting what I want to see into the world, mm-hmm. I'll take that.
Yeah,
that's fine. And I'm just trying to figure it out. But it's funny, I think I've always been this kid, and it's interesting to see it against the backdrop of what the world has been over the years. I mean, shit, and if what was around in 2001, like Friendster?
MySpace, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if there had been social networks, I mean, some of the shit I said in the wake of 2001 and wake of 9/11, which, by the way, I don't even want to get into that whole thing. It's fine. I'm not like scared to, but yeah. It's just such a snake pit. Mm. But I was talking a lot about a lot of things that a lot of Americans did not want to talk about, mm-hmm. like why are we reacting to this with so much anger and fear, and why is our anger directed at people who clearly weren't responsible for this, mm-hmm. like what's happening right now, and no one wanted to talk about that. And good Lord, I can't imagine how hung out to dry I would have gotten on Facebook back then. I mean, I was just at little new and original shows,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And even there, you know, people would get pretty mad at me talking about the war that I was. And I remember being over in the UK, actually, when Abu Ghraib went down and the American soldiers were implicated in it. And it was playing a pretty big place, I remember. And I said something like, yeah, for any of you out there who don't think British soldiers were implicated in this, like, just let's... War is war, and it fucks people up. The point is that these young people, the people that did the horrible shit, they themselves were horribly, obviously traumatized and fucked up, which is why they did this heinous shit. And this is what war is. We need to look at it. But, man, those British people were booing my ass. And it was so valid. Like, 2 weeks later, it totally came out that British soldiers were implicated, too. And I was like, gee! But anyway, yeah.
These things don't exist in a vacuum. There's a whole...
They don't. I mean, chain, that's the whole thing. Again, it's not about... People get so stuck in, like, are you calling me a racist? Mm-hmm. It's not a...
Reactionary.
But yeah, it's this real defensive... I mean, there's a good term for that, white fragility, you know, of people don't want to be bad. There's such a... And the ways in which, first of all, good and bad, fucking Christ, I think that whole dichotomy is part of the problem. But, yeah, it's not about being bad. It's about being real about who we are. And I don't care what nationality you are. You are in war. You're going to be fucked up for a while, man, as far as I can tell. Anyone who survives war emotionally intact, it's the exception that proves the rule.
Speaking of who you are, the whole sense I've got from this conversation, Jonah, is you're a very curious person.
Yes, that's so this tattoo, the you know, the heart and the question mark. Sure, love, you know, but this part, mystery, curiosity, and that's me, love and curiosity, like that's it. And curiosity can look like confrontation. Curiosity can look like an argument. Love can look like confrontation. Love can look like an argument. Passion is passion. Passion is heat, hot, you know, and that's definitely me. But yes, I am really curious.
It's also still a punk, I would appear.
Yeah.
Still the punk is punk.
I mean, it's, you know, it's punk, you know, everyone's always fighting about what that is. And to me, part of staying young, part of staying punk, part of staying whatever. It's about staying curious. It's about staying open. Who am I? What? And I want my blind spots to be illuminated. I want to see how I'm an asshole when I don't know I'm being an asshole. I want to, because I want to stop being an asshole if I can. And that doesn't mean someone's always going to think I'm an asshole. That's fine. But in my heart, I just want to be able to get quiet and go, am I okay with the way I'm behaving right now? Regardless of what anyone else thinks. And if there's any good definition to growing up, I think it's like getting, like loving yourself and like being real with yourself.
Well, Jonah, it's been a total pleasure to talk to you.
Jesus Christ, this is a good one.
Thanks, a really, really
good one. This was a dense one.
Exactly, man. I really want to keep it going, but I'm
I know, me too.
Of the time.
No, I know. We got to go in and see. What time is it, actually?
It's 9:20.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, let's go see Witching Waves.
Is there anything else you want to say or anything you want to add before we finish?
Well, I mean, I'll give a shout out to Witching Waves, and it's really interesting the place we're playing tonight. Bar Block had some intense thing around a trans person using the bathroom there and all this stuff. So we're right in the middle of it. I just kind of wanted to add that in because this is the conversation and this is what's happening. And Witching Waves wrote to me 2 days before this tour started saying, hey, we just found out about this. What do you think about this? And I said, you know what? Let's go. Let's have the conversation. Let's do the thing. And
it took steps to you know, address it.
And I don't know much about it. I just wanted to really presence that because it's not, these aren't high-minded ideological things that I'm just thinking about because I think I'm smart. This is the world we're in, and I don't want to be a dick to people unwittingly. I don't want to judge people, and I don't want to sit by and watch people get fucked with. Like, I do not, that's not, one thing that's always made me more angry than anything else, even more than me being threatened, is when I see someone being bullied or being taken advantage of, like, I get, like, my blood goes. And so, God, there's so much more actually I'd want to talk about, but next time, we'll do another one.
We'll definitely do another
one.
Okay. Jonah, thank you.
Thank you.
Oof, boy, that was a deep one. That was a deep conversation. Could, like we said at the end there, could have spoke for ages and ages and ages, but time is always against us. See, that's the thing about doing this kind of, I guess, I suppose you could call it a DIY podcast, is that you just need to squeeze it in, you know, in between sound checks and food and show times and all that. But hey, I'm thankful that people want to talk to me. I'm thankful that Jonah wanted to talk to me again. I thought that was a really great chat. So here's the deal, right? I passed my driving test at the end of May. I got my license officially through the door. I started June 2017, and I've now done 2 interviews in that car, the Ford Focus. And it's kind of becoming a sort of de facto recording studio. But you know what? I'm actually quite happy about that. Interviews in the past, I've struggled to find quiet places. That's why I've always preferred to do it in tour buses or tour vans. But now having my own space, which is essentially, you know, a portable studio, is good. Soft furnishings, man. He'd really do the business. And yeah, he really can't complain with the silence of inside the car. It seems to be working out quite well so far anyway. And you know what? I'm quite happy with the way it sounded. So yeah, once again, thanks very much to Jonah for taking the time to talk to me. This podcast episode comes out on the 10th of August, 2017, and his birthday is on the 11th of August, so I don't know if he's going to listen to this, but I'm going to wish him a happy birthday anyway. And I suppose if you're listening to this, maybe you should wish him a happy birthday as well. Just saying. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. If you can take a wee second to subscribe to this podcast, if you haven't done so already, that'd be really appreciated. You can do that just by hitting the subscribe button in whatever podcasting app that you're currently using. My task for you, listener, is for you to tell one other person about this podcast, just a pal that you think might like it, or one that maybe doesn't even listen to podcasts, and say, hey, I quite dig this podcast, maybe you'll dig it too. And if you do that, I would really love it. So yeah, that is your one task for today. Just tell a friend. Just recommend it, man. That's pretty much all I'm asking for. I'm not going to make money off doing this. It's never going to be a huge podcast. I'm happy with a lot I've got. But, you know, a little bit of an increase in listeners would never go amiss. So, aye, if you get a wee second, I'd appreciate it if you could do that too. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time. Bye-bye.